And currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
3 years in horse racing off to a fast start? The University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, tiny-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two, about 10 minutes in on this Wednesday midweek here at Churchill Downs. Getting closer by the hour to draw day Monday for Derby Oaks and everything that comes with it. And next week when we talk to Sid, he'll have the ever popular and ever successful final decisions. In the meantime, plenty of things to talk about. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Sid Fernando, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be here.
Sid, you and Barry are you guys are making this Tampa season last.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Barry's done a great job really giving Tampa a lot of social media presence.
Well, it's the meat that doesn't end. I mean, technically, I think it did end. I saw that they declared somebody. I really should go look that up. I think the winter season officially ended. I think they're restarting the stats. But it's amazing what's happened actually with the Florida tracks that. You know, Gulfstream just seems to go on and on. You know, now it's basically year round, and Tampa's meet continues. Then it pauses. They have that simulcast June 30th, July 1st runnings that you know involve hosting fees and such, and so it feels like it's a season without end.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever seen more on Tampa than this year.
Oh, no doubt. A lot of people just like the, you know, the familial atmosphere, and of course, you know, Jason Beam has certainly also helped raise the profile. When people go there for the first time, they find it really charming. So a lot to like, no doubt. At one of the little tracks that could, and we hang that moniker on a bunch of different ones. Sid, a couple of things. First thing I looked at this morning when I woke up was your column, and it was timely for a number of reasons, including, coming on the heels of last week's unbelievably successful OBS sale, and I don't know how many clients you talk to and other industry types, but the sale was just a runaway hit, kind of a runaway train, really. And you talked about Donegal and how Jerry Crawford approaches it, with Mo Donegal, trying to get to the promised land, as it were.
Yeah, Jerry Crawford is a really interesting guy. As I pointed out in that column, he really is only looking for horses, that stay a mile and a quarter or up. And so, inevitably, the types that he picks tend to be horses, staying horses, sometimes later developing horses, and horses that, kind of develop with a style that's very signature to Donegal, which is horses that come off the pace. And, it's funny when you think about it, you don't see many of the Donegal silks on the front end, do you? But they're always closing. And Mo Donegal kind of fits that picture really well. And interesting tie-in, actually, to the sale OBS spring that you just brought up. But, Mo Donegal is by Uncle Mo, out of an AP Indy Line mare, in his case, through Pulpit. And, of course, there have been several horses bred this way that have kind of similar characteristics. One is Motown, the stallion you bred to, who also is by Uncle Mo out of a Bernardini mare, who's by AP Indy, so very similar cross. Motown also won the Remsen, and then he came back late at 3 to win the Grade 1 Hollywood Derby. Modernist, another bred that way, and also out of a Bernardini mare by Motown, and by Uncle Mo stands at Derby Dan. So, it's interesting that type of combination, really produces a kind of a stamina type of horse. And it just so happens, Steve, that the sale topper at $2.3 million that Gary Young bought for Zidane, so presumably will be trained by Bob Baffert, who is known for really horses that went on the front end or horses attending the pace. Anyway, that Uncle Mo is out of an astrology mare who's by AP Indy. So it's exactly the same cross as Mo Donegal. Hmm. And these others I mentioned, Motown, Modernist. Even if you look in the Derby field this year, Generation Down, Onoho is by Leo Ban out of an AP Indy mare. Same type of profile. So it'll be interesting to see this Uncle Mo sale copper, $2.3 million with Baffert, how he'll train and how he'll tend to race, because a lot of these horses tend to come from off the pace, which is not the Baffert style.
Sid, those conversations with Dick and actually the Hong Kong race just ended, and I will say that between Dick's picks and the horse that I suggested, Game Player Times, at a nice number. Dick's Beauty Glory, the 6, wins this, and the 9 came running late and kind of idled a little bit and was just a little late arriving under Hewittson. But Dick is going to be live to the 1 and the 8 in the in his pick 3. But Sid... This thing distills this conversation, and the reason I wanted you to you know, talk about this for a minute, and then we'll juxtapose it against the Derby, you know, the upcoming Derby, and even the Oaksfield to some extent. Over the years, you have made clear that stamina equates with turf, and when you look at these horses that Donegal, in particular, the way you introduced the discussion, it ended up being that the horses that they identified as classic candidates ended up as turf horses.
That's the case. Frequently that ends up being the case. And a lot of times, you know, it's for that reason that some of the, you know, our graded races on turf tend to be much longer than they are on dirt. And so these horses tend to find spots. Not all the Donegal horses. I mean, Doohan was actually an all-weather type of horse, too. But Doohan, say, Patty Oprado, both of them ran third in the Derby, and Keen Ice, who ran seventh. All three of them ended up becoming grade one winners at 10 furlongs. But, of course, they've had others, Arklow, Carrick, Finnegan's Wake, that ended up winning grade ones on turf. So, yeah, it's very true that way. And it's actually something that Jerry does look at, too. But, again, it's very unusual, Steve, for an owner, somebody who's so specific that way, because I know for a fact that he's passed on horses that, you know, have become grade one winners or graded stakes winners at sprints or miles, mile and 16th, but, you know, because his plan is the Derby. In fact, the partnerships for Donegal every year are called Derby Dreams. And so it's really, you know, quite interesting. And, you know, when he first became a client, right from the beginning, when he started with Work Derby Consultants, I mean, that was the mantra, was to look for horses at 10 furlongs. And, you know, that's what we've been doing. But a few years ago, I kind of told Jerry had actually come to this realization on his own as well, even with all the success he's been having, that the way with the point system and what's happening, some of his horses were a little too long for some of the shorter mile and 16th races, keeping his horses out of point systems in the Derby. So, you know, we kind of fiddled with it a little to say, well, maybe we should, you know, look at a horse that's a little sharper than the 10 furlongs that we're predicting, you know. That way you have a shot to get into some of the points races to get into the Derby. And I think that's been kind of one modification in spotting horses, Jerry.
Well, and, you know, getting an Uncle Mo feels like, you know, one of those horses that sort of bridges the gap, that can get a precocious horse that, you know, that early in the season or late in their 2-year-old seasons, they, you know, they can get the mile in a 16th, you know, in appropriate fashion. And, you know, depending on the female family and what, you know, what's
yeah, that's the
available
important
there.
Part. Yeah. Well, exactly. Go ahead.
No, go. I got a follow up. Actually, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, like in the case of Mo Donegal, this is Uncle Mo attached to AP Indy. So what that does is it strengthens the stamina. When you look at Uncle Mo, you know, keep in mind that he, as fast as he was and as dominant as he was at 2. He had that abbreviated campaign at 3, but he's out of an arch mayor. The next stand is by Dixieland Band. He had a lot of stamina and pedigree. He showed it right off when he got Nyquist, because Nyquist was out of a forestry mayor, Speed, and out of a family that actually produced speedy horses by stamina sires, including by AP Indy within it. So what that showed was that Uncle Mo actually can impart more stamina than he appears to, and that's why when you combine him with, say, AP Indy, and then if you add even a bigger female family with a lot of staying blood in it, you're going to get the type of horse that Mo Donegal is, which is not the type of Uncle Mo like Golden Pal, but more of a staying Uncle Mo, and that's really what's happened with Mo Donegal, and that's what he's shown.
I know I brought this up to you in years past, and it might be, it's probably been a while since I mentioned this thing about Uncle Mo, and I'm sure it's also the case with other stallions that weren't able to flesh out their full career as mature horses, either 4-year-olds or 5-year-olds, and that is that a horse leaves the stage with a certain, if they don't come back as 4- and 5-year-olds, there's a certain physical impression, or the horse leaves prospective breeders with, and if they don't follow up, if they don't go to a stallion show a couple of years later when that 3-year-old is now a 5- or 6-year-old. I mean, if you put up a picture, a confirmation picture of Uncle Mo from, his impressive, career as a racehorse, if you put it up to him now, you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe it's the same horse. How big he ended up being physically. And so to some, you know what I mean? The detriment, yeah, that people have a certain impression of a horse, particularly if they don't get a chance to mature in front of an audience, in front of the industry. If you don't go back and look at that horse, you might be surprised at what they are physically as a mature horse, and that's the case with Uncle Mo.
Yeah, I mean, Uncle Mo is just, he fills up your screen as soon as you see him. Now, having said that, as a 2-year-old, even though he's not the same horse he is now, he was still kind of bigger than his contemporaries, too. So you had this feeling that that's how he was going to be developing. But like you said, we never really got a chance to see much of him as a 3-year-old, and obviously not at 4 or 5, or certainly not at 4. And so, yeah, it is pretty amazing to see him now.
Well, we're seeing Mo Donegal out there every morning, and we'll get some thoughts from you next week when the rubber meets the road as it comes to Derby prospects. When it comes to the way in which the sale finished up, let's take a couple of minutes, Sid, and get your thoughts if you had any conversations with people. Obviously, the demand for horse flesh is just, through the roof. And it was very difficult to buy sale prospects at every level. I mean, if you budgeted $500,000, you were spending $750. If you budgeted $200, you were spending $500. It was murder. I had budgets of 30 and 50, and I lost out at 47 and 60. So, no matter what you were doing,
it was an incredible sale. And I mean, again, at the top end, there were 5 horses that were 6-figure horses. But all throughout the sale, I think you hit it right on the nail. Whatever you were budgeting, you had to pretty much take it up several notches from what you thought, because demand was pretty damn good. And I mean, there were so many six-figure horses, and of course the five I noted were seven-figure horses, $1 million horses. But, you know, just the sheer number of horses, you know, at 100,000 or more was pretty amazing, wasn't it?
From every different metric that you would use, and if it was, you know, some of the stallions who are bargains, up to the most expensive stallions, and then everything in the middle. I mean, how about Mendelsohn being the first crop sire with a seven figure seller?
Yeah, I mean, and that was purchased from Japan, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. So you had that Mendelsohn there for $1.3 million, overshadowed his barnmate, Justify, both by Scat Daddy in the same sale. I mean, Justify had, you know, an $800,000 and another at $600,000, but Mendelsohn, he had some other pretty good horses. I can't seem to find it here, but it was a variety of stallions too, Steve. That was really amazing. I mean, did you notice the race day that Maverick Racing, which is Windstar, purchased for $475,000? Race day, of course, the sire of Barber Road and White of Mario, and he's in Korea, and he had a $475,000 horse. What I really found interesting is that, you know, I mean, there were some stallions that, you know, for the prices they brought were pretty damn impressive. Because some of these horses have been exported, others are just really not in everyday vocabulary. Noble Mission had one for $300,000. You know, he's since gone to Japan. U.S. Ranger had one for $280,000. These aren't sires that are in the lexicon anymore. The Lieutenant had one for $255,000.
Yep. Yep. And there was actually...
Race Day had another for $250,000.
Well, the Lieutenant... It's funny, at the end of the sale, I was waiting. I tried the day one and day four, and I did take note of a filly at the end of the sale I knew was going to go for a decent, you know, for a good price, and I didn't even ask to bid on her. But at the end of the sale... Hip 1123 that Becky Thomas had, $255,000. The Lieutenant filly that went in 20-4, the Greens, Len Green and John bought DJ Stable for $255,000.
Yeah, so you know, at these sales, really, pedigree takes a backseat to performance, and so that's where you can overcome a sire or, you know, fashion, and that's certainly showing with the performances in the breezes being reflected in the prices, regardless of, you know, who the sire was.
A couple of others that caught my eye too, for John Sakura and for Hill and Dale, Army Mule, with. You want to talk about a bargain, and $375,000, $450,000, $140,000, you know, and then some rank and file type sales, $100,000, you know, et cetera, $40,000, $30,000, $12,000. But, you know, you breed to Army Mule, and to bring back $300,000 and $400,000, a very nice return.
Yeah, and a lot of people are starting to, and I had kind of advocated to some clients about this before, a lot of people are actually holding on to horses they bred bypassing yearling sales and preparing them directly for the two-year-old sale. The thinking here is that you're giving the horse more time, and you're potentially cutting out a middleman and getting a full retail at the back end at early two. So essentially, you're just holding on, 6 months more than you would if you were selling at the yearling sale. And this is turning out to be quite beneficial for, I noticed a lot of pin hookers themselves were doing it. And then later I saw principals doing it, and it's starting to, there's always an angle people try to mine to maximize return on investment, and this is one angle that's starting to become more prevalent, Steve.
Well, the other storylines that came out of April at OBS, Boldoro, but we were on that one. We were on that story very early. The visit in March, when everybody said that Boldoro was going to score out, and Mendelsohn, we talked. Motown, very nice sale, as you also featured, 150, 300, 350, 160. Very nice numbers. There was a couple of funny standalones that I brought up last week, Sid, and I think one of them may have happened after you and I talked. And where was it? How about Alternation? How about Alternation having a $250,000 colt?
Yeah, he's a good sire. So, he doesn't get a lot of foals, but he's a very usable stallion, and that is a really good price for him as well. One of the biggest surprises here was hip number 1092, a colt by Java's War out of Spidey Girl, $175,000. Java's War is a stallion that Mr. 50th stood. He's a grade one winner for him. And the horse has, since been sold, but I'm pretty sure that Chuck bred this one too, Spidey
nice.
Girl, and I think she was sold as a yearling fairly inexpensively. Let me just check because this could be this looks like it was a home run for whoever bought it. But let's see, Spidey Girl. Spidey.
I've got to look one other one up too. While you're doing that, I've got to ask you about another stallion that only had two hips in the sale, and I have no idea how many mares Fantastic got, but I thought it was notable. Dave Scanlon sold a colt to Omni Racing for $120,000, and Fantastic half brother of St. Liam, and also to Gunrunner's Dam. It may be kind of an under the radar story. $5,000 for Fantastic.
Yeah. And he's a more than ready turf horse.
Good looking battleship gray.
Yeah.
That was an interesting And there was, I love those. I love the you know, when there's with somebody's got one or two hips and they score. And there's one that I'm missing from that I know I brought up last week. That caught my eye, and I don't see it going back. I've got two. I did the entire result charting at the midway point, so it must be on the other one. Terrific, and only one more real chance to score, and that'll be a Timonium, where I think there'll be some desperados when we get to Timonium. And I also did want to mention, Sid, that little aside, you did have the next round, what now feels like Phasig may have a digital sale almost monthly, and you know, as soon as they accrue enough of a roster of offerings, and so you had another one this week. You've got the pop-up sale after Keeneland's meet ends on Friday evening, and some nice horses are being added to that sale. And I sent you that comment from John Fradkin, of course from Rombauer fame, and. Mm-hmm. He thought that this is a very significant development in terms of offering liquidity to, you know, to owners and breeders, you know, being able to, you know, sell almost on demand and have enough of a gathering of sales offerings that you don't have to wait, particularly for the bloodstock trade. You don't have to wait for November. Or December or January. So I thought that was a point well made, and it was met with a lot of approval.
Yeah, no, it was really a good point. Sometimes you don't even think about it, but yeah, it was extremely well made, and he's right. It's so funny, I happened to have, he called me very recently, too, and he's trying to find a spot for Rombauer for next year. But he's a very knowledgeable guy. And he's absolutely right. I mean, the more liquidity that you can generate on demand makes the idea of holding on to bloodstock a lot better proposition, because you're not just... consigned to sales at the end of the year, or you're not limited to trying to get a private sale done. And this is held by sales companies, you know, under all the regular conditions of sales. So it's a lot better protection for a potential buyer as well.
Sid, a couple of closeout points. Any further Derby Oaks developments to have you interested?
The one thing that I find a little puzzling is the program they've laid after Taba. With just the one work coming in to the Derby after that. You know, this is a horse who can train pretty hard, you know, before the sending in the Derby, and even had a blowout a few days beforehand and three furlongs. And obviously, you know, he got quite a bit out of the race. Just didn't seem like it. Like the type of profile that he would have, say, if Baffert himself were training a horse and bringing him to Kentucky. You know, it just seems like Baffert would have had another work into him. So that's kind of a puzzle to me.
It's funny you bring it up. I know that some people have... there have been some rumblings. He is supposed to work tomorrow, from what I understand. And they... The word that I heard the other day was that this has been by design. That they specifically, you know, didn't expect to, you know, to come back with any specific series or a heavy dose of activity after the Santa Anita Derby.
I see, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to be looking to see if this horse gets a blowout old school style like he did 2 days before the Santa Anita Derby, because
right.
If he doesn't, and I really like this horse, if he doesn't, I think I'll have to pass on it, because it just feels slightly different. Anyway, it's just food for thought.
No, you know? I appreciate it, and it's interesting that you verbalize it, because there have been some people that have made that same note.
Yeah, and I do, because I'm a big fan of this horse, and I bet this horse at 4-1 in that race. I liked him from the get-go. I like the fact that he had that blowout. And then suddenly, you know, he's being handled more with kid gloves. Now, maybe he's getting some serious gallops into him. I remember years ago when Laz Barrera was getting Bull Forbes ready for the Belmont Stakes, I mean, he galloped the heck out of that horse. 2 miles hard, open gallops, leading up to the Belmont. The horse is a speed horse, and he wanted to obviously get him to stretch out. But he got a lot out of those gallops, and from what I understand, from what I read somewhere in between lines, Tim Yakteen apparently has been galloping his horse. So, you know, perhaps that is the methodology.
Yeah, there was one. I saw a video yesterday of the gallop. Yeah, no, it's going to come under focus tomorrow, in terms of what is supposed to be the scheduled work. So, well, otherwise, we will look forward, Sid. Your track record is strong, and we're going to be waiting with real interest to see which direction you're going.
Yeah, we'll wait till next week, get closer. But I think this year is a really great year to bet this race, because you're going to get great odds on no matter who you go with. A lot of parity.
And as always, there's enough unusual intrigue. This Japanese horse, that no matter how many times people, it's a Lucy in the football scenario, no matter how many times people say to themselves, I am not betting these international participants, if one wins, God bless them, after the thunder snows of the world and so forth, and the Lannies. So here you are, and here's a horse that's basically touting himself on an almost daily basis, and you think, what do you do? And so some people are going to hold to their guns, and keep their guns and pass. But then there's those who are saying this horse looks too good to not consider seriously in some form.
Yeah, and I think really, after the last two to three international meets and what Japan, the Japanese horses have done, including on dirt, I think
exactly.
Whether you like him or not, you got to throw him in there.
He worked again today, and there's something he does something every single day. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and of course, work thoroughbred consultants, and Sid winding down the breeding season. There's still covers. There's still several weeks of covers happening, and in fact, that we're waiting. We're just sending the mare down to country life again for Mosler.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I mean, this is the time of year, by the way, this is a FYI to people, where you can really get great deals on stud feed. I mean, if you're breeding at this time, you're going to get significant money off the advertised fee. So that's why if you got a mare that's foaling around this time, it doesn't make any sense to book that mare in, you know, November. You wait, and then you book the mare. But if you book the mare in November, you're booking at the stud fee. If you book the mare after the mare folds, now you're going to get, you know, 50% off sometimes.
Sid, do you can explain to people how they approach? I know that there's some people that are going to be shy. I mean, if they're handling their own, you know, their own mare arrangements, they're going to be shy about asking stallion managers for that deal. Explain to them.
Yeah, frequently the farms themselves just give it. Just give it. I mean, I just booked a mare for a client who, we did the same thing, didn't book it at the beginning of the season, just waited till now. I'm not going to name the stallion or the farm or everything, but this is an inexpensive mare and an inexpensive stallion. Well, it's not an inexpensive mare, it's a good mare, but stallion is fairly inexpensive. But the farm, on their own, sent the contract back at 50% off the stud fee.
And it doesn't...
Now you can also ask.
Well, exactly. I mean, and it's don't be shy. In other words, folks, that's the message that we're trying to send
out.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But that's the parting words right there, Steve.
And there you go. All right, folks, don't be shy.
Talk to you later.
Thanks, Sid Fernando, everybody, and be sure to read. Taking stock in this week's TDN. We're going to reach for John Dooley and get a little horseshoe, Indianapolis. We reach for that, and there we go. Here's Wednesday. As I mentioned, there's a bunch of maiden races today. In fact, the card starts with an open company 3-year-old exclusive mile race. And there, just it's one of the things you can't, until you look, you sometimes get surprised. There's a Judmont homebred in here out of the stakes mare, Disco Chick, the Jumpstart mare. This is an Airgate colt, Bright Spark, that's debuting in this spot. And in fact, Cox also has got a Calumet homebred by Keen Ice, who, of course, we just discussed in part with Sid. And I think John Dooley is with us now. John, good morning.
Good morning from Indianapolis.
John, give us your early impressions. Your first 3 days are in the books, and week two today wraps up. And how's it feel?
Yeah, it feels pretty good, Steve, to be, you know, it's interesting. The pick five has been paying off really well. Of course, after 3 days, we had a nice pick five payoff on the Tuesday card. Of course, we wrap up kind of our first 4 days of the season today with 10 races and a fast track, kind of clear skies. So we've been fortunate, you know, fast track for the opening quartet of races for the season here. And Marcelino Pedroza Jr., he won a couple of races the first week, a couple of races on yesterday's card. So, you know, of course, Marcelino, familiar face to me from down at the fairgrounds. Of course, they're riding down there. Jose Riquelme had a winner here yesterday. I see them ride, you know, in New Orleans all winter. And Prentice Rene Diaz, He's of course, he won a couple of races last weekend at Keeneland, and he won a race here yesterday. Lady Frost did one of the favorites for Tom Amos and Maggie Moss. So overall, you know, it's been interesting. You know, it's been fun. I look forward to seeing the turf course here. It looks great. So looking forward to May when we get some turf races in here at Horseshoe Indianapolis.
Well, how do you find the booth and the sight lines?
Yeah, I mean, we're just a little to the right of the finish line here. They've got the pan cameras are right next to me, so they open up these windows and kind of from the 3.5 to the about the midpoint on the far turn. It's a little block, but you know, no complaints. It's a big, spacious office, and Racing Rachel got a little sign on the door that says you know, track announcer John G. Dooley. So I had a curb at Arlington, but I got a door here at Horseshoe Indianapolis. So parked there back there in Chicago days.
I love it. I love it. I'm you know, I mentioned today's card, and you've got a lot of maiden action, and that includes open company. There's one Indiana, two actual Indiana bred maiden races. The 3-year-old fillies, they split the fourth and the sixth, so they ended up with two fields of nine. But you've also got the open companies. That includes the opener today, and then later on the card, you come back with three and ups in the seventh, mm-hmm. and you've got a 3-year-old counterpart for the fillies going the mile in the eighth. So there's pedigree work to be done, and as it happens, the eighth race, everybody at least has started. You don't have any firsters, but the other two, and the, of course, the Indiana bred races, you know, you got horses coming off layoffs in addition to the firsters. So there's a lot of guesswork on this card, I thought, John.
Yeah, and the fact that actually, you know, Brad Cox, he already has a couple of winners at the meet. You mentioned that made in 3-year-old Philly mile in race number 8. We have a mile to start. We got a lot of sprints, obviously. I mean, but, you know, a good part, Steve, for horses. That spent the winter down here, of course, we see horses coming in from Oak Lawn, Chicago way from the south side, you know, Hawthorne, and those the race with us at the fairgrounds, like Forgotten Realm, you know, the 9-to-5 favorite in the eighth race. But Horseshoe Indianapolis was open year-round for training. So horses based down here were able to at least get you know, some workouts in, gallop over the track. But it's been great to see, you know, of course, we'll see outfits like, you know, Brad Cox, Tom Amos won, as I mentioned, the race yesterday. So they're starting to make their presence felt already at this meet, along with Sippy Contreras, too.
I'm just looking at the eighth race, and I mentioned everybody has started, but you do have four fillies that are making their second start, and very frequently, second start, most important, you know, start of a horse's career and the chance for, you know, real improvement. And you've got some horses doing some surface switches of all things. In fact, Forgotten Realm, the Brad Cox, nice curling for Qatar Racing. That was a $625,000 purchase, and she's going to lead from the rail with Pedroza. You've got Jimmy DeVito stretching out Verklimpt, the Klimt filly. I caught my eye that Amos has got the Gunrunner filly out of class of 63, Lipa Coy. This is a $250,000 My Racehorse spendthrift purchase that was going to start on the grass, but it came off at Fairgrounds. And actually, she did not run terribly as the favorite. She was beaten six lengths, but kind of feels like she kind of ran evenly. So it's interesting to see that Amos is stretching her out and isn't waiting for grass. He wouldn't have to wait long if he was really intent on getting this one on the turf. So there's some interesting things happening in here. There's also a layoff horse, Megan's Noel, the 8 at 10-1, Rodney Prescott for Robert Dobbs. And this one tried at the end of the season last year. Happens that Dobbs is very good off these kinds of layoffs and with second-timers. So there's a lot going on in here in terms of the horses that are making their second career starts.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned that Brad Cox rail draw, Marcelino Pedroza Jr., you know, three-time riding champion here. That horse had, you know, Full Rollins Rue on board on debut. That was Louisiana Derby weekend. So, of course, the flow pretty much this winter was based at Oak Lawn Park, but he came in to ride our big days, and that was the case where this, you know, maiden happened to be on the undercard of a big day. 63 Caliber, I mean, went off favorite on debut, and You know, some people try to bet against Tom Amos here at Horseshoe Indianapolis. You know, he gets well back. You know, those horses that have raced at Churchill for Tom and, you know, Maggie and at the fairgrounds as well. Then they come here. But as was the case with Lady Foster yesterday, the favorite, you know, got the job done with Renee Diaz. And, you know, the outside horse, too, that Nile River Queen, Manny Escobel, he's been off to a good start here. C.B. Contreras looking for his first win of the meet. But you know, this is one of those fillies that maybe just didn't like the poly track at Turfway Park. You know, gets a fast track here today. And this filly, Nile River Queen, she's never been hung, you know, on the dirt. So will her form improve? She has to overcome post nine going the mile, but she gets a fast track. And maybe she just didn't like the synthetic there in Florence.
Interesting. Nightcap, at least for the thoroughbreds, is a maiden 12-5. There's also the sprints that we mentioned. Any other thoughts? Any other opinions?
Well, it's great. I mean, I'm kind of really glad that we're getting to see a few mile races. Get to see the horses go around two turns. Obviously, you know, our director racing Chris Polson, you know, carding these races going short because, you know, it's only the fourth day of the season here. We go a long way, you know, wrapping up the day before Thanksgiving, before the fairgrounds meet starts, you know, the 151st, you know, season down there. So, you know, I look forward to the sprints. And again, the pick fives, well, you know, going into yesterday, the pick five average payoff was $27,000. Of course, it was a big top $50,000 plus on opening day. So, you know, yesterday was a nice payday. And I know some people aren't a big fan of those jackpot wagers. We do have, for those that might be interested, I mean, there's the Straight Fire 6. There's a carryover just over $8,000. That starts on the 3rd. It's a jackpot wager. I know some people, not, you know, the greatest fans of those jackpots. But there is $8,000 for the taking there, sitting in the kitty for race number 3. It starts that jackpot wager, the Straight Fire 6.
Well, underway, and day 4 of the meet. And wading into the action. John, I appreciate it. We'll be tuning in later. And, of course, 2:30, first post at Horseshoe Indianapolis, and things will start to pick up. We'll start getting the full weeks of action, and we'll get on the turf soon enough. So talk next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, of course, you know, and then we had Thursday racing, 3:30 Eastern post time, and we're racing on Derby Day with a 10:30 opener here. We'll get the races off, and then simulcasting from Churchill.
I'm gonna have to get a Derby opinion from you next week, John. I get it, and Echo Zulu in the Oaks.
Well, we'll see about that. We'll talk next week.
All right. John Dooley, everybody, at Horseshoe Indianapolis, kind of just really getting going, and the racing's been good. They're off to a good start. We're going to take the break, top of the hour upon us. Seth Merrow is going to join us next, and I can tell you that for those of you that jumped in and punched that ticket with Dick, didn't pay much, $41.20, because it chalked out a little bit, but Stoltz did win the nightcap. So the 188 pick 3 comes through, and that's better than better than the proverbial sharp stick in the eye. What I didn't see the end. Because, let me see, what was, where was Dick's other? What was that? I think it was the 1 in the 8, right? That, I think it was the 1 in the 8, that, right? That Dick had used in the nightcap. So, all right. Yeah, the last 3 winners. Yeah, 440, 580, 460. Yeah, so be it. It's fun. Let's take the break. When we come back, we'll check in with Seth back home in the Capital District. We're live at Churchill. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Experience the all-new Paddock Suite at Saratoga Racecourse. Available for groups of up to 80 guests, the venue features a climate-controlled lounge overlooking the Saratoga Paddock. Visit Naira.com/Saratoga to book your group outing today.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd. PA Day races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals. With a